catchphrases are just really familiar phrases. They're just phrases you hear a lot or are pretty well known, or you hear it and you're like, oh man, that rings a bell, or that I attribute that to a person. That's what catchphrases really are. But the question is, do we always know what these really mean or where they came from? Or are they just something that got ingrained to us as we're growing up or as we heard them? Well, I ask all that and I talk about those because today, as we continue on in the Sermon on the Mount, we're going to hear a couple of phrases that I think are kind of biblical catchphrases, that they're phrases people seem to know that they attribute to the Bible, but I don't know that there's always a great understanding of what they really mean or what they're really about. So that's what we're going to look at today. And the two phrases we'll hear today are eye for an eye and turn the other cheek. Now, who here has heard those phrases, right? We've probably heard both those at some point in our lives. But we're going to look at those two as well as some other things that Jesus talks about and really figure out what are these about. So we're going to see what they really mean, what are we supposed to do with them based on what Jesus is teaching. All right, in continuation with the Sermon on the Mount. Now, we have this week and next week left in Matthew 5. Because remember, the Sermon on the Mount is chapters 5 through 7 of Matthew. We're going to do the whole thing. We have a little break close to Easter that we'll take. But otherwise, we're going straight through 5 through 7. 2 weeks left in chapter 5. So we almost made it through our first chapter. Today's passage, however, will be chapter 5, verses 38 through 42. It will be right up here behind me on the screen. In your Bibles, there on the table. If you're following along on your own device or anything, I will be, as always, in the New International Version, the NIV translation, so you can feel free to follow along. Any slides up here and the sermon will be posted on our website under the sermon page later today or tomorrow. So if you missed it or want to go back to it, you can totally do that. What we're going to do to kick it off, let's read the whole passage, just a few verses, 38 through 42, then we're going to break this whole thing down. All right, so Matthew 5, starting with verse 38, we'll go through 42. It says this, "You have heard that it was said," this is Jesus again referencing back to what they've been taught, "eye for an eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you," here comes Jesus' teaching now, "do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." All right, let's start with this eye for an eye business. I had a seminary professor that any time we would come up on a tough topic, he'd be like, "All right, what's this business about? This all about?" He's this old guy, but I thought of him when I'm like, "Let's figure out this eye for an eye thing." So it is based on Deuteronomy 19:21, which says, "Show no pity. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot." Now this is often taken as retribution and vengeful. All right, but what it comes from is a Latin phrase called lex talionis, which means punishment being equal to the crime. So it seems fairly straightforward. Life for life, eye for eye, the whole deal. Now, it wasn't only an accepted form of, I guess, punishment, but it was actually mandated and required. All right, judges were to show no pity. That's why in that Deuteronomy verse, it says show no pity. They were required to make sure that whoever did something wrong paid, and they paid equally. But the reason wasn't revenge or vengeful. It was actually, it was really to stop the disagreement or to stop the conflict right there. You know, you did something, you pay equally, and it's done. It wanted to avoid any further bloodshed, any further vengeance, right? No lengthy feuds, right? We didn't want what might be known as the Hatfields and the McCoys. Who is familiar with the Hatfields and the McCoys? Anybody in American history? Good, okay, a few of you. All right, I'll try to get as much of the facts as I can right. But in the late 1800s, kind of in the Kentucky, West Virginia area, we had these two families, and the Hatfields and the McCoys. Now, they ended up having this lengthy feud, and there's debates about how it really started. One of the McCoys was murdered, but they actually think, a lot of people, that it started in 1878, when one of the McCoys accused a Hatfield of stealing a pig. That is entirely possible how it started. Now, if we were taking our eye for an eye approach, if Chris were to steal my pig, which, by the way, at this time was a huge deal because livestock and pigs and hogs were a huge commodity. If Chris stole my pig, I would steal his pig. Done. We're over. Well, that's not what happened with the Hatfields and the McCoys. Right, this kept going. There was a trial for this Hatfield, but then he got off on it. There were some issues with the judge and everything, and things just kept spiraling. There was an election in 1882 in which some of the McCoys stabbed one of the Hatfield men after this election. Well, the retaliation, these McCoys were tied to a bush and shot and killed 50 times. 50 shots. So then there's on and off trials. There's bounties on people's heads. There's more killing. And then finally, in 1890, things started to subside, but it is still known as this crazy lengthy feud in American history. 1890, when it potentially started in 1878, 12 years of vengeance and anger and bloodshed. So with the eye for an eye concept, this type of thing is what was supposed to be avoided, right? Long feuds, unnecessary bloodshed and feuds, right? So it really wasn't this super vengeful concept. It was kind of about retribution, okay? But, because it seems okay, but Jesus calls us to something alternative, all right? Jesus has alternative values. He calls us to alternative values. Jesus calls us to alternative responses, so not the same response. He wants us to live righteous lives. Jesus has alternatives, and that's kind of our main point today, is that Jesus calls us to alternative responses. That's what we're going to keep looking at. We're going to look at three alternative responses to what the world might tell us when we're confronted with bad people or evil, when we're confronted with a repayment requirement or a required time, and when we're confronted with people in need. So we're going to see and talk about what the common option might be, or what our default mind or the world might tell us we should do, and then what Jesus' alternative response is, because Jesus calls us to those alternatives. So let's look at that. The alternative number one, this will be non-resistance. So it's going to be non-resistance, not fighting back. So in these situations, if the default response might be to fight back, Jesus calls us to non-resistance. This comes from Matthew 5:39. He says, "But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also." So this is that turn the other cheek phrase that so many people know. All right, now it's really about non-resistance, right? But it's an illustration. It's not just physically talking about turning the other cheek, because it's more about if somebody is humiliating you or attacking you personally. Because he says if somebody slaps you on the right cheek, in order for a right-handed person to slap somebody on the right cheek, it's a backhanded slap, which was known as one of the highest forms of humiliation and degradation, more so than the open hand. So to hit him on the right cheek, it was a backhanded slap. And this was this insult, huge insult to the person. But what Jesus is saying, go ahead and just offer up the other cheek. Allow them more humiliation. If that's what they need, go give them to go more. This is non-resistance. That's what Jesus is teaching. Now, why? What might he teach us? Well, evil and bad goes away, or it suffers when there's no resistance to it. It loves resistance. I brought here with me today, I always got to have something to look at, right? My resistance bands, right here, resistance band. We use these for exercise, right? So if I want to work out the arms a little bit, right, I need resistance. And then I feel that in the arm, right? So it's kind of like, okay, somebody's coming at me. They're attacking me personally, and I'm fighting back. Well, there's the resistance. I'm going to fight back even more to create some more resistance. I really feel it, right? But if I stop with the resistance, the arm no longer feels it, right? The resistance goes away, so that burn or that muscle goes away. The strengthening of the muscle. That's kind of what's going on here. Evil, bad, goes away when there's no resistance. Dietrich Bonhoeffer had a super cool quote about this. He was a man, if you're unfamiliar with Bonhoeffer, he was a German theologian who wrote a lot of classics on discipleship. He was also a staunch anti-Nazi movement man and pastor. He was teaching underground during Nazi Germany. He was harassed by the Nazis. He was eventually even arrested by the Nazis, then later charged with being part of a conspiracy to assassinate Hitler, and he was eventually hanged for that and killed. But he had a quote in his book on discipleship about evil and resistance that says this: evil will become powerless when it finds no opposing object, no resistance, but instead is willingly born and suffered. Evil meets an opponent for which it is not a match. Evil and bad, it wants to fight. It wants to feel powerful. Non-resistance takes away that power. But hear this, non-resistance is not a non-response. It's an alternative response, because we're still responding. but it's responding in grace, in forgiveness, and having a heart for that person that is coming at you. How many times have we heard the phrase, the bully has probably been bullied. The person that's hurting you has been hurt. Hurt people hurt people. So it's having that heart for that person, being like, man, there's grace for you. So whatever the response is, not to fight back. It's also not okay with just being humiliated, but it's to respond to them with grace and love. That's an alternative response to fighting back and offering this tough resistance. And I believe that that is what turning the other cheek is really about, and how Jesus is teaching us to respond here. So that's alternative one, non-resistance, right? Alternative two, generosity. So it's going to be generosity, not stinginess. All right, Matthew 5, 40 and 41. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. All right, this thing with giving up the shirt. There is a legal right that somebody would have to take your shirt if you owed them, potentially for a repayment of a debt. They were allowed to take you to court at this time and take your shirt. However, the coat that they wore at this time could not be legally taken, probably because it was heavier, it was thicker, and was also part of a sleeping garment. All right, so that was not allowed to be taken. Even if the law might have allowed you to have it for a day, you had to return it to the owner by the time they were going to bed at night. So you could not have a legal right to someone else's coat or robe like this. But what Jesus is saying, give it up. If they come to take your shirt, give up your coat as well. Go ahead, go above and beyond what you have to give. Give more than what is required. And then in verse 41, it says, if they want you to go 1 mile, go with them two. This refers to a Roman military practice that was also legal at the time. What Roman military soldiers could do is they could compel people into service right then and there on the spot. Usually it involved carrying of some sort of equipment or doing some sort of physical labor. This actually occurs in the story of Jesus carrying his cross in Luke 23:26. It says, as the soldiers led him, Jesus, away, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, put the cross on him, and made him carry it behind Jesus. They used this practice with Simon to force him to carry Jesus' cross. So the military could only force this, though, for up to a mile worth of service. That was the law. So Jesus says, hey, if you're required to do this mile, go two. Give more than required. This is tricky, because when I see a requirement, a lot of times my default is that's what I have to do. I remember, I thought about this a lot with requirements in classes I took. I took a class as an undergrad. I went to a liberal arts college, so we had to take classes in a variety of fields. I didn't like that, I'll be honest. I didn't want to take science classes. I'm terrible with science. So I took this natural science class, and one of the assignments was to, we had to do moon observations. So every night, you were supposed to look at the moon and like write one observation. And we got people that were really into it that are writing 3-4 things every night about where they're seeing it on the sky. You better believe that mine was one sentence, about 6 words long each time. I hit the requirement only. There was no above and beyond. Only going to hit the requirement, because that was my default. And I think that's how some of us are, especially with our time. If we're required to give time, maybe you're required to volunteer for something as part of your job or a group you're a part of. But it's like, hey, if I got to volunteer for 2 hours, I'm going to watch the clock 2 hours and then I'm out. Because that time is valuable to us. But what Jesus is saying is go extra. Give more than what's even required of you for a repayment or a commitment or anything. And it's radical and kind of crazy sounding, because many of us don't have a huge abundance of things, whether it's money, it's stuff, or definitely with our time. We may not feel like we have a huge abundance. But Jesus is saying go above and beyond. So many people are focused on giving only what is owed or what is required. But Jesus calls us to an alternative response, to give generously, to give more than what is required. All right? So Jesus calls us to give generously. That's alternative two. Alternative three, our last alternative we're going to see. We're going to call this concern. And it'll be concern for others. Concern, not ignorance. Matthew 5:42, our last verse of our passage. Give to the one who asks you. Do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. All right, so this is about being asked for things, being asked to borrow or give or lend or help or whatever. Now, in this verse, there is no distinction about who's asking it, who's asking for it, or what is being asked for. Right? This is the family member that needs to borrow. This is a friend that needs help. This is the person on the street that is asking for begging or panhandling. I think we've all probably been in these types of situations where we have seen or been a part of people asking us for something. Now, many times we've probably said yes and helped in some way. But if we're being honest, I know if I'm being honest, I have said no multiple times. And I tried to think about that this week. Why would I say no in these situations? Why do I say no? I don't think they'll pay me back. I don't have the time. I believe they'll misuse whatever I give or not use it well. When I thought about that, that's a whole bunch of eyes right there. That's concern for me and ignoring the other person. And that's the opposite of what Jesus wants us to respond with. He wants us to have concern for the other people, for the others, right? And we might even be right with our concerns. I don't know what somebody's going to do with something I give. If I give $5 to somebody on the street, I don't know what they're going to do with it. I really don't. But it's not up to us to judge them on that. God will work in their heart in his own way with what they do with that. All right, we don't know what the outcome will be, but God still wants us to show concern. I remember back between my freshman and sophomore years of my undergrad, I was in school here in Madison, and I did some ministry at Peace Park downtown. If any of you are familiar with Peace Park on State Street, it was very different back then. It's been kind of redone and done up a little nicer now. Back then it was different. And a lot of the homeless people hung out there. So we went down there and we would meet some of them, talk to them. We participated in a Tuesday night meal for them. And I remember one time I was down there with another guy that was here helping out. And we met this guy. And we had a really great first interaction with him. You know, we just talked to him about his life and everything that was going on. We started talking to him about Jesus and faith. And he was actually seemed really open to it. And I'm probably, honestly, a naive 19-year-old thinking this is going fantastic. Right? And he's like, yeah, I'll totally come to church if you guys come and give me a ride on Sunday. At the end of the conversation, he asked for a little bit of money, and we did. We gave him a little bit. No idea what's going to happen with any of this. But I'm feeling great, right? Like, yeah, homeless ministry is great. It's always going to be like this. This is going to be great. Well, we go down on Sunday to pick him up to come to church, and we found him. He was there. He was passed out on a bench, drunk. And I remember feeling like, man, like, this guy said he was going to go to church with us. What's the deal here? We gave him time. We gave him money. We were with him. We cared about him. What is going on here? So we went back to church. I felt a little beat up. I was like, all right, it's okay. We went back down to Peace Park again another week, and we saw this guy again. He wanted nothing to do with us. He came and asked for more money. We said, man, we don't have any more that we can give to you. And he gave us this look that spoke volumes to what he was really thinking and then just turned around and stormed off. And man, I walked away from that experience, those kind of different experiences, feeling just burned, feeling like I didn't do it right. I was jaded, maybe not ever want to do this type of thing again. Did I do it wrong? Was I even supposed to do it? But as I was processing that, even thinking about this week, you know, I got to realize God doesn't judge the outcome of our concern for someone. He looks at our concerned heart. He doesn't look at us based on what that other person does. So in that situation, God is looking at my heart and the heart of this guy I was with that we showed concern for the other person. He doesn't judge us based on what this other guy did. He's working in this other guy's heart in his own way. All right, God looks at the fact that our heart was focused on the needs of the other person and that we wanted to show love, to show kindness, to show compassion. All right, many people might think you just take care of yourself, just think about you. Don't worry about anybody else. And now Jesus isn't saying neglect yourself, but he's talking about an alternative to just focusing on yourself and showing concern for others. Yes, there are times in your lives where we have to be sure to take care of ourselves, but Jesus is saying don't ignore the people around you. Have genuine concern for the people that you see every day in your life, for the people that you encounter once, and respond with help in any way that you can. That's that alternative of having concern for somebody else and not ignoring what's going on around us. So we're going to have times in our lives, unfortunately, when people come at us and attack us in humiliating ways. They attack us personally with words or something else. we're going to have times when we're required to give to someone or to something. We have to do that. And there's going to be times when there are people in need that we see that need some concern for them. Now, people around us, society, social media, the world, whoever, may try to tell you how to respond. We may have a default response in our heads. But I would encourage all of us to look at these alternatives of what Jesus is teaching, to respond in that way. Respond with these alternatives. Respond how Jesus would. Live out these alternatives and live how Jesus would want us to live alternatively. Let's pray. God, again, we thank you for this teaching from Jesus, God, what he has to say and how we can use it. God, that he teaches just a different way, God, just alternative values to what we may be told by others. God, just this way that he wants us to live. God, to respond to people with grace and forgiveness. God, to respond to people with generosity, to give to people with generosity, to give our time when we're required God, to give more. Give above and beyond when we can. God, to show concern. God, to have your eyes for the people in our lives, to have your eyes for the people that we walk by every day, to see them, God, how you see them. God, I pray that we would all be able to respond in those ways, to really take stock of our interactions, God, and see how we can respond in a way that you would have us respond, God, to show grace, to show forgiveness, to show generosity, to show concern, God. So I pray that you would put that on our minds, on our hearts this week, that we would just find even just one interaction, God, where we can show that to somebody, where we can show somebody, God, who you are. We thank you for this teaching again, God. In your name, amen.